Tuesday, December 14th. I slept until 8:40. What a delicious feeling, and how perverse. Now that I'm back in Washington, with a laden desk and deluge of things to do, Jean-Louis, gay and bouncy, did my hair, and then I worked at the desk a while. Looked out the window to see the assembled troops, the pomp and ceremony for the arrival of a chief of state, and rushed over to Lyndon's office a little before 11 to go with him to the arrival ceremony. Colonel Cross, very handsome in his full uniform, what a change from ranch khakis, escorted us out on the lawn, and then with clockwork precision, up rolled the big black limousine, with Pakistan's green and white flag flapping from one front fender, and stars and stripes from the other, and out stepped Lloyd, with handsome, smiling Ayub Khan. He is my favorite chief of state, the most attractive one I've met. Very much a man, and with the presence, the dignity, the look of strength that fit him for the role of leader. He and Lyndon have a natural affinity for each other, in spite of our troubles of today. This is the first state visit in a long time. I no longer feel the same high excitement, but it is good drama. A 21-gun salute, troops at attention, these two fine-looking men marching along to review the troops. And while they were, I looked out in the crowd and saw, to my amazement, several Indians in full feathered headdress. I turned around to my left to greet Minister Buteau, he who's had some rather acid things to say about the United States, a bit of a troublemaker this last year, and had my mouth open to point out to him the Indians in the crowd were. All of a sudden, thank heavens, something clicked and I changed it to an inane comment on the weather. Buteau was quite young, educated in California. Interesting looking, but seemed rather chip on shoulder, or was I only being guided by what I'd read about him? Over the usual two speeches, President Ayub's, I thought, practically without notes, very earnest, low key, straightforward and persuasive. Then we walked into the diplomatic reception room and stood in line to meet the greeting party, United States officials, and Ayub's entourage. I was surprised to find former Ambassador Ahmed, the number two man under Buteau, himself very able and a good deal older than Buteau. And then Lyndon went off for a long talk in his office with Ayub. And I upstairs for lunch on a tray with Lucy, to working out about her school. She will not leave Georgetown, although she will no longer be in nursing when the new term comes. She's dropped chemistry. I am not sorry she is dropping nursing. I think her real talent lies in expression, creative writing, perhaps, or drama. But it will be a hard, unhappy story to tell. Patty is in every other sentence. I'm beginning to be convinced that this is enduring. I worked an hour on the Christmas album that I'm giving Lyndon for his present. Pictures going back to 1936. How valuable the old ones have become in one's 50-year-old eyes. And then Lyndon came home and asked us to have lunch with him, though we'd already had it, pretended and had clear soup. And he launched into a long conversation with Lucy. He's going to send the child and Patty in the plane up to spend a part of Christmas with Patty's family. Lucy could not have been more thrilled with a star in her hand. There's no doubt that Lyndon's figure is infinitely better looking, but the lines in his face are deep. I think the loss of weight is a great plus. Nevertheless, it does reap a lot of inquiries from reporters, from friends. How is he really feeling? Well, how he was feeling at that moment was dead tired. And so we went into his room, which is blessedly dark, and took a long, long nap. It's just as though I had found something I had been hungry for. The weeks at the ranch have been so pleasant, they have not included much real sleep. There were two sweet, oblivious hours, and then Lyndon returned to reading reports and talking to staff, and I worked on the Christmas album. Some of the titles just rolled out. The picture of Linda and Lucy asleep on Christmas Eve, 1948. Lucy with thumb in mouth, and Linda with a big smile, was a natural, for while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads, And then with a pang, I saw the last Christmas picture in Mrs. Johnson's house, Christmas Eve of 57. It marked the end of a tradition, and none of us knew it then. Then it was time to call and greet my house guests, the Ed Harts of Corpus Christi and the Tom Millers of Austin. I had one last look at the guest list while I was getting my hair combed, checked to see if Bess had sent the seating chart to Lyndon and guest list to all in the house, especially Mrs. Hobby. I wore my gala dress, white satin and sparkles. The house was beautiful for Christmas, but since President Ayub heads an Islamic nation, he had pulled the curtains across the creche. I had some pictures made in front of the Christmas tree, and then some much-needed ones upstairs with Lyndon, just the two of us. We never have posed ones together. In a lightly falling mist, we went out on the north portico to greet Ayub, cameras flashing to right and left. Lyndon is always very considerate. In the crush and confusion of those moments, we gathered in Buteau and Ambassador Ahmed and Begum Ahmed into the picture. And then we went up to the Oval Room. This is always one of the most pleasant parts of a state dinner. Tonight, there were some 15 of us. Ayub's party, of course, Hubert and Muriel, the Balds substituting for the Rust. The ebullient Goldbergs, and earlier I'd heard that Ayub was quite taken with Arthur. And slight Alabama-born Walter McConaughey, our ambassador to Pakistan, and the Lloyd Hands, Anne looking like a girl out of a Botticelli painting, in pale pink chiffon with sparkles and a high-piled hairdo. It was here that it became apparent that the mood of the evening was business. Men gathered in clusters and talked. I dislodged President Ayub for a moment to present our gifts with a little explanation. One, a picture taken in space from a satellite as it flew above Pakistan. Books for Begum Ayub Khan. Tiny television set. And then they were back talking again. This kept on and on, with Bess looking in hopefully, and Lloyd trying without success to get us moving. At last, President Ayub Khan turned to me and said he had brought some small gifts. Actually, they were two very elegant Oriental rugs already spread out on the floor, and we'd been walking over them without calling attention to them until the moment of their presentation. And a box of lovely brocade. In bounced Lucy, in a very short skirt and flats, just in time to receive the two boxes, one for each of the girls. And then Lloyd ushered us out the door. To my disappointment, the colors had already disappeared. I liked that moment of theater when the officer says, "Sir, I request permission to remove the colors." Very stiff and erect, four servicemen walk in, walk out with the flags, and we follow them. We encountered them, flags in hand, at the top of the stairs, and went down to hail to the chief, paused for pictures at the bottom of the stairs, Lyndon, as usual, gathering everybody into the group. And then I shall always be impressed by it. The entrance to the great East Room, the moment of expectation, as the President and his wife and the visiting Chief of State arrive to greet the guests. I always feel a little detached, like a spectator. Tonight, the cabinet was represented by the Freemans and the Gardners. First state dinner for the Gardners since he entered the cabinet. And the Hill, very sparsely represented. Only Senator Daniel Brewster and his wife. And Lindy Boggs, without her husband. And the Harris McDowells. Sarge Shrivers and Dave Bells, both of whose agencies, Peace Corps and AID, were with us. And my old friend Walter Washington, whom I have planted trees all fall around Washington school buildings, and his wife Bonetta, heading the Girls Job Corps. I was delighted to have them to something besides a working session. Pearl Mester, looking resplendent in a beautiful pink outfit, and ever so many diamonds. Later on, we had a moment at which she told me she wanted to do something for the beautification program. What marvelous news. And Patsy Derby for her first state dinner, wide-eyed and thrilled. Business was represented by the Reynolds Girdlers of Sinclair. He, too, had a word to say about beautification and his company's interest. And the Bob Woodruffs of Coca-Cola from Atlanta. There were quite a few Texans besides our three house guests. The John Jones of Houston. The Herman Lays of Frito-Lay from Dallas. And the Jess McNeils of San Antonio, whom Lyndon later ordered in bag and baggage to spend the night with us. And from the world of the arts, the Robert Merrills, although my favorite memory of him is in fringed buckskins, singing Tumbling Tumbleweed, and not in black tie. Handsome Gregory Peck, and his wife, who looks French, and Dr. and Mrs. Pope of the Freer Gallery of Art, and the Rudolph Serkins, who on Sunday had given a concert that was a triumph, everyone says, and Adele Simpson, her dresses are good for me, and quite a lot of press. I did my best to make the receiving line personal and chatty, but I was conscious that we were about 30 minutes late, and that restrained me. There was one long table for about 20, and the rest of the 137 guests, and a happy arrangement of round tables for 8. The president was on my right, Buteau on my left, and rank and luck combined put Dorothy Goldberg and Jane Freeman on their other sides, so I never had to worry about conversation. Ayub and I talked about their new capital, Islamabad, which Doxiadis is laying out. About China, he said, I think the great tragedy of today is that there is no dialogue between your country and China. He beamed when I told him, Barbara Ward had said, about Pakistan being a shining example of an underdeveloped country that was making great strides forward. We talked about birth control. He says they're really getting underway this year with a program accepted by the people, in no way odds with their religious scruples, hindered certainly by their ignorance, but which he believes will keep their population growth within the bounds of what the country can take care of. At least it has complete government backing and sponsorship. And then I talked with Buteau, and it turns out the housing development of Karangi, which we saw when we were there, is his brainchild. It was one of the most interesting things we saw on our trip. Ambitious in size, so well planned to suit the terrain, low in unit cost, Lyndon wanted to adopt it and bring it back for use in poverty areas in parts of our own Southwest. I remember I learned a new word there, ekistics, the science of city planning. One thing Buteau said I thought was rather revealing. He said that on some visit he had made over here, I judge perhaps it was one where he represented his country at the funeral of President Kennedy, he had said something that he understood made the president perfectly furious. I looked at him blankly. I had never heard anything about it. I refrained from saying what I thought. Sir, you overblow your importance. I doubt that he ever heard about it. Actually, I thought he looked quite intelligent and likable, but almost as though he were determined not to be liked and expected it. Quite different was Ayub, so calm and reasonable and strong-looking, and yet some of the fire, perhaps, was gone. When he rose to make his toast, it was really, as Isabel Shelton said, as though he was speaking directly to the president, as if there were no one else in the room. I am only talking to a friend now. May I have the liberty of doing so with a great heart? It was a very simple, candid, touching expression of the way things are with us now. He spoke of our warm and friendly relations in the past, and then, it hurts me to say that our relations have, to a certain extent, been soiled. And I think that has happened because of a lack of understanding of each other's difficulties and problems. He thanked us for our help and said that he is the first to admit it, not only in my heart, but in front of my people. Then, in a period when the world has shrunk, people's expectations have risen. They want the good things of life quickly. The people are not prepared to wait. They are impatient. Therefore, there's great pressure. I could look at the face of Buteau, multiply him by 90 million. Ah, but he says they are 100 million now, and feel something of this pressure. Ayub went on, lately, unfortunately, we have been bedeviled with a major conflict. My endeavor always has been to live in peace with our neighbors, especially with our big neighbor, India. We need peace if we are to get the things done for our country that need being done. It was a touching, stirring speech. He makes you want to be his advocate. I feel that these are people we could understand. Lyndon took him straight upstairs with a few of his ministers for further talks, while I led the guests into the red room and green room for coffee and liqueurs. I had a few minutes with the Newhouses, who were looking for the portrait of a chief justice which they had given to the White House. Thank heavens, it must be the great John Marshall by Jarvis, and pointed it out above the door in the red room. We were all delighted. They murmured something about wondering if it were in the basement. It's one of our prizes. And then I took Doxiadis and his young daughter. We sat on the sofa in the green room for a moment and discussed city planning in Louisville and Islamabad. He's a very fascinating looking man. Max tells me he tours islands of Greece.